today's Central Standard, many of you may remember this voice from the Woodlands Racetrack.
Here comes Woody! Out of the box, number four, and a girl off to a good start. Out wild by number five of the outside gameplay. 4-1, 2-5 with one turn to go. Now number one, Dan Puppy Patch, holding on the rail. Here comes number five, gameplay of the outside. 1-4-5 with two. Watch White Static, who fell out of the box, coming from behind. Out of the turn. How they come from White Static. It is 6-5, 2-4.
I'm Jabalani LaFall, and we'll explore the history of greyhound racing on today's show. Plus, stay tuned for the second half of our show, where we'll learn about a new take on the French macaroon being produced by a local pastry company and their paranormal helpers. That's all ahead on Central Standard after this hour's news. Good morning, Kansas City. When you consider names such as Cocktail Connie, Deep Dish Dick, Spaghetti Eddie, and Arkansas Roy, who didn't wear shoes, and when you consider the names of dogs such as Flying Stanley, Mortician, and Mr. T-Bone, a.k.a. Bone, you understand that the Woodlands Racetrack in Kansas City was like no place other. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Today, the tall tale tales of dog race announcing and the gritty, surreal world of gambling with our guest today, Randy Birch, a renowned dog race broadcaster, race handicapper, and author of the book, Where Winning Happens. We want to qualify up front by stating we are not taking a position on dog racing today, but instead exploring a bygone era in the history of the Metro. And with that in mind, we want to mention that right out of the gate, so to speak. Randy Birch, welcome to the show.
Thank you, John Belaney. Well, pleasure to be here.
Now, when did you decide to write a book about your experiences as a dog announcer and race handicapper?
Well, the last day the Woodlands was open in 2008, August 23rd, what happened was when Kansas taxed the racetrack 60% for slot machines and regulatory fees, it became impossible to operate. So my wife and I talked about it because I started signing programs. A couple people would come up to me with programs, commemorative programs, the last day. And there was a long line of people, and I mean not 20, 30, close to 100 people lined up, and I'd signed program. I'm almost late getting up to the booth. And I thought to myself, you know, why don't I write about this? If all these people are interested in it, you've seen everything that's happened here. You were here day one, September 14th, 1989. Why not write about this? And then I had a get-together with a buddy of mine who worked in the camera crew, Jerry McNeely. And I had a young man from Kansas City, Kansas, who was 20 years old, tell me, overhear our conversation. He goes, tell me about the Woodlands. He grew up in Kansas City, Kansas. He's 20 years old. He didn't know what it was. I said, you're kidding me. I was just shocked because for close to a decade, it was the number one tourist attraction in the state of Kansas. It still has all the money handle records in the history of greyhound racing. And so I thought to myself, if someone doesn't preserve this, all these people that worked so hard to make that place happen and made it historically great could be forgotten. And that's what made me want to write the book.
Tell us about the culture of Woodlands Racetrack. It seemed like something out of an Elmore Leonard novel, eclectic, colorful set of people, dogs with great nicknames.
It was wonderful. It was wonderful. It was like family. We would work 9 performances a week, and on Tuesdays, our day off, most of us would get together at one of our security guards. Our security guards were, many of them, ex-wrestlers, all-star wrestlers, who everybody knew in Kansas City, Kansas, watching wrestling. Rufus R. Jones had a beautiful little restaurant down at on Brooklyn, near Bryant's down there at 23rd, and we'd get together Tuesday and go down to Rufus's and eat together. So here we are, 9 performances a week. But it was like family, and you got to know the people. I would sit before I'd go up to the booth. I'd visit with the people there. I'd find out their birthdays, their anniversaries, which I found out nobody ever had done as far as a racetrack announcer is ever concerned. And Jimmy Smith was one of those patrons who invented BigJackButBetting.com, I'm doing now, and he had never seen that before. What he had seen was people who were announcing would say, welcome to the racetrack. It's good to have you here. Where I'm saying, hey, you know, Guess who's here tonight? Walt Bodine is here tonight. Guess who's here tonight? And then I talk about a frequent visitor. Oh, yes, yes. We had so many personalities. We had athletes, Joe Montana. We had all kinds of people visit the Woodlands, and I wanted to make sure they knew. I always took the Cheers approach. I want to make sure someone knows that I appreciate that they're there. And I want to make sure that I create an atmosphere where they feel at home.
A place where somebody knows their name.
That's right. So that's right. And you know what? That had never been done at a racetrack, and I did hear from some people that this is not right. But once they started betting, they realized that it's more than right. In fact, handle-wise, which is the money when they say handle at a racetrack, it's never been better than it was at the Woodlands. $159,000 race in 1991 that's never been equaled. $1.4 million that was handled. 6.8 million people went to the place in the first 5 years. So
it was one of the top tracks in the country.
It was the number one Greyhound track ever.
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 Why was that? Why do you think the track was so successful?
I think it was a couple things. There was no gambling at the time. There was no Powerball even in 1989. It opened September 14th, 1989. And I really think that it was genuine. People fell in love with the dogs. It became a social place to go, where you'd see people you knew. It was comfortable. It was very comfortable. And needless to say, it changed my life in such a wonderful way. Now, of course, with the internet and BigJackpotBetting.com, it's amazing. It's amazing the people I reconnect with that I've known for over 20 years.
Now, speaking of people falling in love with the dogs, there was one in particular that you became enamored with. Who was Mr. T-Bone, and why did the Bone, as you call him, become a fan favorite?
Mr. T-Bone was a dog. Most dogs are bred from stud dogs.
Right.
It's a process where they're bred to become great. Not Mr. T-Bone. Mr. T-Bone was a dog that was raised on a farm in Alabama. It was basically a dog that never should have made it. And since I came from humble beginnings, and a lot of my patrons at Kansas City, Kansas, came from humble beginnings, there was something wonderful about this dog that would come from behind, not just once or twice, but night after night would be in last place coming out of the turn before the final turn coming home, and all of a sudden, I would see the dog come, and I'd start, "The Bone, the Bone, the Bone," and the place would just absolutely go berserk. It was basically, and people wrote poems about this dog. We had birthday parties, fan clubs for the dogs, where people would have special events. I remember one time I was on Channel 9 with Len Dawson, and we had live shots at the racetrack of Mr. T-Bone's birthday party. That's how big he was in Kansas City. And he raced Blendway in a match race in 1991. Everybody in this town was talking about it. It was a major event. Would the dog with the great breeding that's a sprinter beat this lunch pail dog that Randy Birch likes that runs 3/8 of a mile? 11,000 people were there. We had people with Blendway backer shirts, Mr. T-Bone shirts, and it was wonderful. It was, and I will tell you this, when Mr. T-Bone died, I was working mornings at KFKF here in Kansas City, and Tim Keithley called me up, the public relations director, and we had a good cry over it because it was more than just gambling. You'd root for the athlete. You'd get to know their trainers. You'd get to know, and the people in Greyhound racing are mainly farmers. They're good, humble people. They're wonderful people, and I've seen them when their dogs get hurt, cry. This is their family. These athletes. This is part of. This is they're like their kids. And so it was Mr. T-Bone was just part of history in Kansas City. And of course, we had dogs, Flying Stanley, who won the most money of any dog ever, over $1 million the dog won in purses. We had Blendway. I used to call him the Kansas City champ. What would happen was I would give them monikers based on their running style. The Kansas City champ, I had, and I'd play with their names. Like I had a dog named Breathe Easy. When Breathe Easy would come home, I'd go, "Here they come for home. It's 6-4-3. It's Breathe Easy." So when Say It Loud would come home, I wouldn't say Say It Loud. I'd say Say It Loud. When it was Say It Fast, I'd say Say It Fast, Say It Fast. you'd play with their names.
Was the dog by chance Black and Proud?
Yes.
Just saying.
There you go.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 yes. KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. Our guest today is Randy Birch, a renowned dog race broadcaster. You can probably hear from the chops in his voice, and a race handicapper and author of the book, Where Winning Happens.
It's How I Hit the Jackpot at BigJackpotBetting.com, Where Winning Happens. That's the title of it.
I'm actually abbreviating it because it's...
Well, sure, and I appreciate
very
that.
Long.
I understand
very long.
That. I understand that.
How did you get into broadcasting, and how did you lead up to becoming a dog race announcer? You don't wake up out of bed or sit in a meadow as a kid and say, you know what, I want to call greyhound races.
Right.
What happened?
Well, I became enamored with broadcasting. I love sports. As a kid, we used to have in my backyard what we called fake games. And I was the announcer, and we'd make believe we were – one day the Red Sox would play the Twins, and my house would be Fenway Park in Boston, and we'd recreate the game. And I would do the actual play-by-play, and, of course, I would do beer commercials and sell hot dogs in between. I'd just make the guys laugh. And I always thought that was so much fun. And so I had a career day at Dubuque, Iowa, where I'm from, Hempstead High School, and Red McAleese came in, who was this real enthusiastic sportscaster I listened to when I was a kid, and I asked him, how do you get into that? Afterwards, and he told me about Brown University, which at the time was Brown Institute, and that most broadcasters he worked with at the local radio stations there went there. So I eventually got in there. I graduated, and then I started the radio trail. And the radio trail used to be you'd go through small markets. It was kind of like minor league baseball. For me, it was such wonderful stops as KBIZ in Ottumwa, Iowa, KHAK in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, WQUA in Moline. And in 1984, it was KLSI in Kansas City. And then I eventually went on to KFKF, where I was there for 17 years in the morning show. And one of my comrades at KLSI was Pete Enick, who was a sportscaster, still works here in town. And he called me one day when I was the news director and said, Randy, I got a great idea for you, for your skills. He said, the way you ad-lib and do play-by-play, which is basically what I did at the racetrack, there's a new track coming in Kansas City, Kansas. And my first thought was, dog racing? You know, what is next? You know, American Gladiators? I mean, what's going to happen here? But Pete knows me as well as anybody, so I went out and auditioned against six guys. Didn't know that there'd be six people. I got out there one day in 1989, and I decided that it would be fun because I really didn't care if I got the job. You got to understand my mindset at this point. I had no idea what I was getting into, so I thought it would be fun instead of Here Comes Woody if I did like an Ed McMahon thing. Where here comes Johnny, a long kind of thing, which had never been done before. So they had schooling races, and they gave us programs, and you basically had to do a make-believe race. Well, who better could do make-believe stuff? I've been doing make-believe stuff in my backyard since I was a kid. So I get there, and I start making up stories about these animals and their names as they're going around the track. And our Sportview television director at the time, Jerry McNeely, says, don't let that guy leave the building. That's what he yelled down the hall. Well, they did let me leave the building, and I got a call about a day later from Rick Bedeker, and I had a job. And all of a sudden, I get into this business I know nothing about. Keep in mind, I've never even been to a racetrack. Know nothing about. And suddenly, all these people are coming up to me saying, where did you learn how to do this? I had one guy from Los Angeles, Bob Bedeker, Rick's brother, said, I told my brother, I've been to every racetrack in America. You're the greatest race announcer I ever heard. And I tell young broadcasters this story because it's so true. He tells me that I walk down the hall, and a gambler walks upstairs carrying his program. And he said, are you Randy Birch? I go, yeah. He said, don't you ever shut the you-know-what up. You're making me – I love listening to you, but you're making me crazy. I'm trying to handicap. So here I go in my mind. I'm a young man like you. In my mind, I'm going from the greatest that's ever been in the booth. And I'm humble, and I never took it to my head or anything. And I walk down the hall, and here's a guy telling me I'm terrible. So that's broadcasting.
That's broadcasted.
Well, if you could, real quick, can you give us a quick air check with the Here Comes Woody?
Oh, yeah. I would get back, and the lure would come around, and it was, Here Comes Woody! And then they take off, and out of the box they come, and then I would go.
Yeah, that's pretty special, pretty signature. Now tell our audience, our listening audience, who is Woody?
Woody is the lure that would come around, and they named it after the Woodlands, obviously. And I have no idea, but I've done that Here Comes Woody. I did it at Royal Stadium at the 7th-inning stretch. I used to entertain the reporters at Arrowhead and Marty Schottenheimer's news conference when I covered the Chiefs of the 90s. I did it in elevators. I did it in gas stations. I have no idea why that makes people happy. It makes them laugh, but it does. And I'm always grateful to do it. You know, it's good to be known for something, I guess. Not like I planned. And you'll be testimony to this. You didn't know you were going to be doing what you're doing now.
I had no clue.
No way. No clue.
And I will tell you something, full disclosure. I actually practice in my backyard by myself with a tennis ball.
Oh, yeah.
And the crowd goes wild.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I found out every broadcaster has this insane gene. Bill Grigsby, when he heard my story, he said, wait a minute. He read about me in the newspaper. He goes, that's what I did in my backyard. Late Bill Grigsby, who announced the Chiefs for years. He said, I do make-believe games in my backyard. We all have this insanity gene that makes us want to recreate things. And it's just been wonderful. I just thank God for it. I really do.
For your listeners, the secret is out. We talk to each other, among each other, and we say, that's what I did in my backyard. So that's the way it goes. Tell us about the science of picking a winner in Greyhound races. You're also a handicapper, so tell us about
it. It's very interesting, and it's wonderful fun. It's like figuring out a puzzle. It's like it's like seeing what's going to happen before it happens. You have lines to every race. You have grades to every Greyhound. They go up maidens to grade A. They win their first maiden race, then they go to grade D, then they go to grade E or C, B, all the way up the line. And you figure out who's got the best early speed. Who's going to get a clean trip? Who's not going to run into a Greyhound? Who's going to get a clean trip? And you figure out who's going to win. And then you balance their times with, have they won from this post spot before? Do they like running on the outside? It's a fascinating, wonderful process. And the thing it has that other forms of gaming do not is there's no chance to this. We have winners every night. There's no chance to this. There's no. Gee, I pulled the arm, and I might get three cherries. No, you figured out who was going to win. You figured out who was going to win and why. So you have actual input into what's happening. It takes luck. It does take luck. I'm not going to tell you it doesn't because it does. But you have input into what's going to happen, which to me. You know, if I was playing, for instance, what we started to do on Big Jackpot Betting, the guy said, Randy, make this real, will you? Put up your own money. So we set up an account, and I started betting with them every night, and I won 92 straight nights last year. Wow. 92 straight nights. Now, you tell me the next time you go somewhere and play that you've won 92 straight times. So the fact is, it does take luck, but it also takes science and a little studying. You study replays. You study the dogs. That's what you do. And if you're a fan of it, like any sports hero you have, it's an easy thing. You know, anybody who's played fantasy sports, fantasy football, fantasy baseball, you predict what someone will do in a certain situation. That's what it is, and it's great fun. It's great fun.
What is your response to animal rights activists who have a problem with dog racing?
I have no problem with that. I think America's where you should have every right possible to speak out and stuff. My response to them when they tell me is when's the last time you've ever been to a racetrack? And that's usually where the conversation ends. They've never been there. If they were there, they would know that there's a vet on site at every racetrack. They couldn't hurt an animal if they tried. Okay? And when you think about it, if the animals are your way of making a living, would you not want to take the best care of them? Yeah. Yeah, you would. The reason that stuff works is that everybody has owned a greyhound, a dog, at one time or another. So all you have to do is say it, and it becomes true. But the fact is, the sport's been around since Queen Elizabeth, okay? And in those days, there might have been some of that. I don't know. I wasn't there. But I can tell you this. I've been to every racetrack in the country. They all have a vet on site. You can't, to show you how strict it is, I was fined one time at the racetrack. I went to get my paycheck. And I walked through the paddock because I had to go there to get my paycheck. I was fined for carrying a Coke in my hand because the caffeine from the Coke, if it was spilled, and I didn't know this.
It's bad for the dogs.
It would enhance their performance and be bad for the dogs. That's how close they watch it. So it makes for a nice fairy tale. It makes for a nice story. It moves people because we love dogs. I love dogs. I've had dogs. But is there any truth in it? No. Secondly, if it ever happens that they would shut down greyhound racing, think about it. What's going to happen to the breed? It's going to go away. Do you think you're going to call me up and say, hey, Randy, I've got a greyhound. I heard you have a greyhound. How about we get together this week at my house, have a few beers, and have them breed in the backyard? It's not going to happen.
That's one thing that you won't hear us say. We did that too in the backyard.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying? The breed will go away if these people continue to and I don't have any. I would love to sit down and talk to them. I'd love to take them to a racetrack because most of them have never been there. So, and show them and have a vet lead them around. The greyhounds at racetracks, believe me, most of them live better than you and I. They are taken care of, pampered every day. These are their kids, as I explained when we started.
I wouldn't argue with that.
No, that
they probably are taken better than me, certainly.
Yes, they live a good life, believe me.
Tell us a little bit about BigJackpotBetting.com, how that came about.
Jimmy Smith was one of my original players at the Woodlands in 1990. We had every major handicapper in the country. Jimmy was the former racing director at Hollywood Greyhound Park. And in those days, you would go to a racetrack and you had so many players that would come in that didn't know what they were doing. For guys that knew what they were doing, like Jimmy Smith, it was almost like a license to steal money. Because you would go in and people would bet on stuff they had no idea about. And he knew who was going to win. So he came and he watched me. And he watched the incredible success we had, which is still the best that any track's ever had. Not because of me. We had a lot of things going for us. We had the best dogs in America because Kansas is the breeding ground for greyhound racing. It's where the National Greyhound Hall of Fame is in Kansas. And he watched me. And one of the things I did, and I'm grateful for, is I got to know my players. I just didn't get in my car and go home. I would go out, have a burger with them. I'd have a cold one with them at the nearby watering hole.
You'd have a burger with the dogs.
Oh, well, sure, if that's what it takes. Yes. But what I would do is get to know these people. And, of course, then they start feeling at home. They say, Randy, could you announce this for me today? Sure. All of a sudden, they have a stake in the whole game. And Jimmy saw what I did, and he invented, based on the Woodlands, a form called StatForm, which teaches people online. Computers were just coming online about 1990, to the point where you actually posted stuff and this type of thing. So Jimmy was just learning software, so he invented something called StatForm. Because he saw the long lines of people at the Woodlands lining up for these tip sheets to see who was going to win the races. And he thought, you know, why don't I recreate something like that on the Internet where I teach them how to do it? And this was before the Internet was full-blown, but he was that much of a visionary. So he invented that, and he always told me, that he just loved what I did. And I was always grateful for that. He's a wonderful friend and a wonderful person. So he called me at home. In 2010, and said, Randy, I'd like to get you back into racing. He says, could you do one of those funny opens you did at the Woodlands for 11 minutes and do a make-believe race for 14 track executives around America? And, of course, what I love to do, sure. So it was April 1st, 2010, as I say in my book, An April Fool's Day That Changed the Industry, where I did this, and I heard a few snickers at the other end of this conference call. And I said, Jimmy, that's what you're looking for? He said, Randy, that's exactly what I'm looking for. Thank you. We'll be in touch. Well, we'll be in touch ended up to be 2 months later. Meanwhile, I started doing freelance work for radio stations on my Windows 7, where I was learning how to do podcasts, learning how software works and this type of thing. So I called him. Is this the software you're looking for? He said, yes. So our first podcast we did, and the podcast is we do an open for the night, that night at the races that they play at the racetrack. So our first one was in West Virginia in 2010, July of 2010. And they became so popular that suddenly Orlando, Florida picked up one. Daytona Beach wanted to do it. Tucson, I'm on at Tucson. I'm now on at 9 racetracks and 2 casinos doing these podcasts where I just preview what's coming up and create excitement, have fun. I talk, same thing I did at the Woodlands. I talk about the bartenders. And nobody's unscathed. Everybody gets a nickname like Deep Dish Dick and Cocktail Connie. And basically, what I do...
And Arkansas Roy.
Normal it out. Let me tell you something. And if nobody gets anything out of this interview, I had a lady in Minneapolis, sweet old lady. I worked at a nursing home when I went to Brown University. And I used to sit there and visit her with her at night. And she was so happy. And I asked her one night, I said... You know, because I never saw a family there. She was always by herself, and I'd mop up the floors, and we'd sit there, and I said, you know, you look so happy. And she goes, well, there's a reason for that, Randy. And I go, what's that? She goes, well, you figured it out. That's why I'm talking to you now. And I said, well, what do you mean? She goes, reason I'm so happy is I give love, and I get love. She says, life's no more complicated than that. She says, everybody makes more out of it than it is. And I started to think about that. It was in broadcasting, I thought, like that. You know, if you show love to people, they'll show it back. And it's a very simple thing. And if somebody told me one reason I think the Woodlands worked, and one of the reasons Big Jackpot Betting is now in 10 countries, at 9 racetracks, at 2 casinos, is I take a vested interest in the people. And I do care about them. And I think that works. I've always thought that. And it sounds corny. You say, well, you love someone, or, you know, it sounds, but believe me, if corporate America and people would look at stuff like that, the prime example here is the right down the street, the Kauffman Institute. There was a guy that lived that to the T, Ewing Kauffman, sending kids he doesn't even know to college from Westport High School. He gave love. He got love. This man did some incredible things, and he was a testament to that. If you met Mr. K once, he knew your first name. He'd know your first name immediately. So that's basically it. And now it's grown into 3 live shows. I'm going to be doing triple headers at Hollywood, Palm Beach, and Tri-State coming up in December. Now we're in 10 countries at BigJackpotBetting.com.
Our guest today is Randy Birch of BigJackpotBetting.com and a renowned dog race broadcaster and handicapper, author of the book Where the Winning Happens. Thank you very much for coming.
Well, thank you for having me. It was a delight to meet you.
We're going to take a quick break. When we return, dessert makers talk about preparing food in the former site of a morgue, sweet treats that are to die for. Coming up next on Central Standard.